cliffcentral.com.
Who is that, my buddy? That is Taylor Swift.
Indeed it is.
Okay. Who wants to meet Colette Dawson? Bring her in here. Let's get her settled in. Has she got something to drink? Have you been looking after her, Lucas? Lucas, you've been looking after her?
Always.
I hope so. Very important woman, this. Have a seat, Colette. Look at you. Look at you. So much to celebrate.
Colette, do you want some biltong?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
You sure? No, sure? We're all having some, so you're welcome to.
It's ostrich.
Many ostriches died to bring you this biltong. The least you can do is have some.
Okay, thank you. I'll definitely have some. Thank you.
It is your 25th anniversary in the entertainment business in South Africa, which is a small business. I mean, to last that long and to know as many people as you have known and to have pulled off as many productions as you have is miraculous.
I know. It still feels quite surreal when I realized it last year. You know, it feels like it's forever and it feels like it was yesterday.
Yeah. Do you ever take a moment? You kind of have to be forced to take a moment because I've seen you in action. You just don't stop and realize what an achievement this is. I mean, there's some people who go into the theater or the performance business or the entertainment industry at large and they go in for a couple of years, like I'm talking 5 or 6 years, and then it burns them out.
Absolutely. I mean, it is hard work and it literally takes over your life. And there are moments when you think, my word, you know, what am I missing out on? But when you're doing something that you're so passionate about, you know, you just find it has been my life for 25 years. It pretty much has been all that I've done.
But it can be exhausting. The other day when I saw you, you had you'd been at a big show the night before and you woke up really early after probably about 3 or 4 hours of sleep maximum. And you came in here with one of your artists to do an interview.
Absolutely. And that's what you have to do. It is 24/7. And I think that's where a lot of people fall short is they don't realize that it is. You know, people see the glitz and the glamour and, you know, you hosting big events and things like that. They don't see that hard work where you're working until 3 o'clock in the morning to get a venue, you know, an event up and running. The next morning you're up at 3:30 to go pick up artists to take them to interviews. You know, that's,
and
that's
artists are such a nightmare to manage. Come on. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
I could tell a story or two.
I'll bet. You're going to. That's why we got you here this morning. Okay, but let's just start with where you started, because many people who know the entertainment world of South Africa might not necessarily know that much about you, because you're sort of a behind-the-scenes person. You're not up on the stage singing and dancing and clapping and making a noise.
Absolutely, and I think that was the one. That's the one thing that has stood me in good stead is that I've never been a frustrated performer.
Yeah.
So often, especially in publicity, you know, it's often. I mean, I'm generalizing here, obviously, but
sure. There
are definitely the drive to, oh well, I haven't been on stage or my stage career has finished. Let's go into this. I have never wanted to be on the stage. That never interested me. What always fascinated me, literally from a young age, even at school, was the putting together of the production.
Did you do that at school?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was in one production where I literally stopped the show because I kicked the main prop off the stage as an 8-year-old. So I was, this is not for me. And literally the whole way through high school, it was always putting the shows together, being stage manager, being director. That's always been my affinity.
You need a unique set of skills to do that, but you started off in hospitality.
Absolutely.
Like hotels and stuff.
That's it.
Right?
So straight out of school, I was headstrong even at school where I flatly refused to go to university. So that, of course, was a
Did
major
Did your parents
scandal.
Want you to go to university?
You know, funnily enough, I didn't think about it at the time, but obviously they did. I'm the youngest of 4 siblings, complete overachievers, and all in business. And then there was this one who absolutely refused to go to university, being called into the headmaster's office because of it, because I was voted most likely to succeed in business, believe it or not.
And you refused.
I refused. I wanted to do something with people. And I went into the hotel industry, loved it for the 3 years. And then,
hang on, were your parents angry with you or upset or worried about your future? Because if you do study something and you have some kind of qualification, it's like a safeguard.
Absolutely. And I mean, obviously, we had those conversations about, you know, get a degree, at least you've got something to fall
back. Come on, Colette, do something. Don't make us worry and shit.
Absolutely. And as I say, my father's in banking, my brother's in finance.
Yeah, these are smart people who'd expect you to follow a similar line.
Absolutely. And but, you know, even then, my parents were so supportive. My father, I said I wanted to go into hotels. My father did some research and managed to actually organize me an interview with an HR person at Protea Hotels that got me my position in the hotel. So they facilitated basically my choice, and they have been supportive ever since. Well, I mean, I think they've had a few grey hairs along the way.
Yeah, but thank goodness they supported you in the long run, because if they hadn't, it would have been a miserable existence.
Absolutely.
There's nothing worse than when you do something that you love, but everyone around you disapproves, and you have to suffer through their disapproval. So it's a good thing they came around.
Absolutely. And especially, obviously, after 3 years, I was doing really well. I was the youngest hotel manager in the Protea Hotel Group at 20.
Wow.
And then I decided I wanted to take a break and go backpacking around Europe, as you did as a young 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Went over for 3 months and stayed 2.5 years. You know, I just absolutely adored the backpacking.
Where did you go? I mean, where did you manage to stay for such a long time? They didn't kick you out.
Well, it was in and out of getting renewed visas at the time.
Yeah.
So backpacked around Europe. I even worked on a kibbutz, which I absolutely adored.
Ben did that for a while too.
It was quite something.
Absolutely. It's an experience that I'll never forget.
And they work you, huh?
Actually, I was on a kibbutz that was very, very minimal work. So it was cool. My job was done by 10 a.m. in the morning.
Like
so it was
a holiday.
Cool.
Paid holiday.
Yeah. Then I got back to London and I had no money. It was 6 months into my trip.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, either I've got to go home or I've got to find myself a job. And at the time, we couldn't have full-time employment as a South African in the dark days of apartheid.
Sure.
So the options were au pairing or bar work. I chose being an au pair, and that decision literally changed my life. I worked for a family.
Because, I mean, that's au pairing is looking after other people's children.
Absolutely. I mean, and especially as a spoiled South African young girl who had never had to do anything for herself.
Yeah.
Suddenly I was looking after an 11-year-old.
But who were this who was this for? Who was the family?
So it turns out, I mean, 3 weeks into the contract, I only then met the father of the family. Turns out he's an entertainment lawyer to the biggest entertainment group in the world called Nederland International. And that was my entry into...
What was their name?
Nederland, and that was Jerry Katzman.
Jerry Katzman?
Yeah.
I've even heard that name.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's a huge force to be reckoned with in the entertainment world, both on Broadway and the West End.
So did he know that you wanted to do what you eventually ended up doing?
No, it was such an organic scenario, and that's when you just know you're in the right place, right time. I mean, it was a fairy tale existence. I was 21, and I found that I had so much time on my hand. I only had one daughter who was at school from 8 till 4:30, so... You know, I'm not one to sit around and do nothing. I said, can't I do something?
Yeah.
And literally, that was 16th of March, 1992, which is the mark of my anniversary. He took me into London. And then they'd bought a derelict movie house, which turned out to be the Dominion Theatre. And they were busy refurbishing it. And he said, well, would I like to be involved in the project? And literally, he spent the day with me showing the plans and the backstage. And I felt this goosebump moment that just never left me. I didn't sleep that night. And the next morning I said, this is what I want to do. And so for the next 18 months that I was working for him, he literally just, I was like a sponge. He literally taught me so much. I could sit into board meetings, negotiations. I mean, he was in the middle of a negotiation with a really useful company, with Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Huh.
It was just fairy tale.
That's the kind of access most people dream of, whether it's in entertainment or anything else. I mean, if you wanted to be a stockbroker and you ended up working for Warren Buffett, you know, it would be a similar situation, because here's this guy who's so connected.
Absolutely. And
he let you just sit in on everything.
And that's it. I mean, I was a gopher, to be honest. I mean, I literally did menial work.
Collect his laundry and stuff like that.
All that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But to sit in on all those meetings and to watch this building being built with the Dominion Theatre. I don't know if you've been there, but it is the most beautiful theatre in London. It's been the host of shows like We Will Rock You, etc. And it was just, oh my word, I just found an excitement that it just never left.
you meet some famous people working for him?
Oh, absolutely.
Who did you meet? Come on, now's the time. After 25 years, you can finally name drop a little bit.
Well, obviously the whole, I mean, the really useful company, Cameron Mackintosh, those are obviously all the people that I wanted to aspire to meet. But then I also worked on two Royal Variety performances, which was at the Dominion at the time. So it was Shirley Bassey, Elaine Page, Boyzone, which was my big boy band of the time.
Really?
Yeah, well, I suppose I shouldn't admit
that. Who was in Boyzone again? Remind
it
us.
It was Ronan Keating. Ronan Keating. Stephen Gately, right. Okay, all those guys.
So Ronan Keating, the smile on your face, that one, right?
Oh, yes, pre that.
That's him. Come on, don't laugh, my buddy. You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about, but you sound terrible.
That's how he sounds. The smile on your face, let me know that you need
Liar.
Me. That's how he sounds. You met him?
Yeah. Gloria Estefan was the headliner.
Did she speak English?
She was wonderful. To us menial gophers, a lot of them wouldn't give us the time of day. One of them being Jason Donovan. He was quite dismissive of
and look
all
at
of
him
us
now.
People.
You could probably go up to him in a supermarket right now and tell him to pass you the beans and he'd have to do it.
I won't comment. And then,
why was he horrible to you?
No, it's just dismissive. You know, it's a case of, you know, you are there to serve. So serve me. So,
but he was Australian. How dare he?
He
think
was
he's
huge
important?
At the time, you know.
Australians.
Well, he was popular. It was Neighbours, and he had just been in Joseph. So he was a big star on the bill. But there was just so many people. Then further on down the line, I was flown back to the We Will Rock You opening. Robert De Niro literally sat in the row in front of me.
It was Robert De Niro.
Well, it was his money that invested in the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he's a bit of a supporter of the theatre. World.
Yeah, huge, huge, huge. You know, so
I knew he was into film, but he's into theatre.
Yeah, so his company actually was the one that put in the money for We Were Rocking. No one believed that it would have the success that it had. So, you know, the list goes on. You know,
did you meet Andrew Lloyd Webber? He's a strange human being.
Yes, I did. Because
a strange guy,
very strange, but quite closed. You know, but always polite, always friendly. But obviously, I was just in the background. That was the busy. At the time, the Nederlanders were negotiating with the Really Useful Company because Andrew wanted to bring in Sunset Boulevard onto the West End. Huh. And they wanted the theatre, the Adelphi Theatre, which the Nederlanders owned. So I sat in on all those negotiations in buying half of the theatre.
Now, what interests me is that despite all of that, you didn't stay there. I mean, could you not have stayed there or did you want to come back?
Well, I mean, at the time, obviously, our visa laws were very strict. As I said, this was pre-1994.
Because, I mean,
we weren't very popular.
But you're living the dream. So you must have been hard as hell to give it up.
It was the most difficult thing to get on that plane and come home. And I mean, I know that's awful. And I was I hadn't seen my family. It was days before Skype, before cell phones. So I literally had not seen my family for 2.5 years. And so obviously I wanted to see, but it was the hardest thing for me to step on that plane and leave. I mean, it was leaving the dream, you know. I mean, it was always the plan to come home and then go back, you know. And I mean, there were quite a few opportunities that, as it turns out, I just didn't take up on. It was the hardest thing to leave.
Damn. Did they miss you? Did you ever stay in contact?
Absolutely. I mean, we stayed in touch all the time. I've been back many, many times. I was even there now in February. And they spoil me rotten when I'm there. And it's always a case of, when are you coming back? You know, and I know that there's a job always open for me in any other Nederlanders.
But then when you came back here to South Africa, you kind of met up with a guy in a similar position in the South African entertainment business.
Absolutely. I mean, I came back, I tried hotels again, and I was like, this is not for me. And my whole mind shift had changed. So I thought...
Because it's not as exciting when you have to deal with room service in room 34. As opposed to like a live stage show that's about
absolutely.
To go on,
and
right?
You know what? There is no adrenaline rush than in the entertainment industry when you're standing there and you're involved in a good quality production or concert or whatever. There is no other alternative adrenaline rush. So I was 23 and I thought, okay, well, how do I get into the South African industry? There were three main impresarios at the time. There was Peter Turin. There was Janice Honeyman, who was running the Civic Theatre at the time, and Richard Loring. Yep. I wrote to all three of them and I said, this is who I am. This is what I've just experienced. Can I meet and chat about me getting into the South African industry. Richard picked up the phone and phoned me.
And the other two ignored you?
And I didn't hear from the other two. And I always tease them about it. I was like, who knows? And Richard phoned me and invited me to the soundstage, which at the time was a venue literally in the sticks in Midrand. You know, it was an office club.
That was his soundstage, right?
Yes, the soundstage.
So this was, my parents used to talk about it. So it was a theatre, but it had... You could go there and eat and
dinner
drink.
Theatre. Yeah.
So you sat at a table rather than in a row.
Yes, absolutely. So it was 6-seater tables. You joined other people. It was a lot of corporate entertaining there as
Mabali
well.
Mabali was conceived there.
I think a lot of people were. So I went to go meet Richard. We had a chat and he offered me a job on the spot. And I started working for him. Literally gave notice to the hotel that I was at. I was working in Mahalis Park at the time in Harder Beersworth. Gave my notice, and a month later I started at the soundstage.
What is, for people who don't know, because a lot of people don't necessarily know how the theatre works behind the scenes, what are the stresses of that job when you are, because they're different jobs obviously, but if you're stage manager, for example?
I mean, it's just making sure that everything comes together. There are so many different facets. You know, there's the performance, then there's the costumes, then there's the right calls to get the artists on stage. It's the make sure that the band, you know, can hear the artists and vice versa. And then obviously it's making sure, I was always front of house, making sure that the customers are happy, the guests are happy, they can see, hear, etc.
Okay, front of house is like the stage manager for the audience side of things.
Yes, so it's looking after the audience, making sure that they find their seats, they're happy, they get their drinks, they get their dinner.
Is front of house like the manager of that area and the stage manager is the manager of that area and then they both report to the boss?
Yes, pretty much. That's a simplistic view, but yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, help me to understand it.
No, absolutely. So basically it's what happens basically in the public area, so that would be front of house. So that's making sure, literally from arrival to parking to customer getting in, getting their tickets, and in that sense, getting their dinner, getting their drinks, sitting, being comfortable, and being able to enjoy the show.
After being in London, you come to South Africa, it's a different audience.
Yeah.
Was it frustrating to you because in London there's so much support for the theatre, every night it's sold out? Here in South Africa, it's a much harder job to get the seats sold.
Well, interestingly enough, Richard was a visionary with the soundstage. Those shows ran, some of them 15 months, it was so popular.
Really?
Always full, always busy. That concept, I still think, hasn't been emulated since. It was a lot of corporates. So a company would buy it was a 300-seater venue, so it was manageable, would buy the theatre, do their award ceremony, et cetera, and with the shows. I mean, one of the shows being the whole Girl Talk range, which I think literally revolutionized the tribute shows with this whole girl power thing.
Were those the first... variety shows, effectively, like in terms of singing. So you'd have a menu of different songs.
So that was pretty much a tribute to all the female artists. Yeah, I mean, but obviously Richard had a whole range of shows. I mean, the first one that I worked on was called We'll Meet Again, which was hugely popular, which was set about all the Vera Lynn songs, you know, all the wartime songs, which also rang.
Those are Ben's favourite.
I think it was about
We'll Meet Again. Don't know where. Don't know when. You know that one, Mubs?
No, I do not.
She's a bit too young, I think.
No, really? Not from your time? You're kidding. You don't know that?
I mean, when you sing it like that, I definitely don't know what's happening.
That's how Vera Lynn would sing it. Are you kidding? You know I'm right. Come on.
It's close enough.
Back me up on this one.
Yes, I've always said to you, Gareth, you should be on stage.
Yes, with my beautiful voice. Haven't you ever heard this song? Come on, let me play it for them quickly. They need to hear this. So that was the first show you worked on with Richard.
Yes,
Colette actually played the violins here as well.
We'll meet again.
You know it, right? Was my singing so bad?
Yes, it was. It really was.
But I know we'll meet again.
Winston Churchill used to play this in the toilet when he was in. Did you know that? It's his favorite toilet song. smiling through. Shame, what happened to Vera Lynn? Is she still going?
I'm not sure.
No, she would be 170 years old or something now. All right, so these tribute shows, these are very popular in South Africa.
Absolutely. And Richard was just, I mean, this was, 23 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, huge careers like Amor Vatoni, all those ladies, their careers were started at that, on that stage. You know, and the shows ran. I mean, Richard would consider a show not being hectically successful if it only ran for 9 months. And I mean, that does not happen nowadays.
That's a long time.
Exactly. The whole culture has changed. But at the time, we were full to sometimes over capacity. I mean, it kept us on our toes every single night.
I'm amazed at this kind of broad range of stuff. What kind of music do you actually like?
I love rock.
Really?
Yeah. Queen is my all-time favorite band.
So a lot of the schmaltzy musical stuff is not for you.
You know, I mean, I have such a wide range because I have to, you know. I work in so many areas and I appreciate each genre for that genre. The people closest to me always tease me. The fact is that I did have a boy band phase, which, you know, the boy zone in the Westlands stage. But now definitely it's rock, it's Coldplay, it's Queen, it's all those kinds of bands. That's my passion. But obviously I appreciate everything else that I work with.
It must also be interesting to meet some of these artists, because a lot of them are people who are very inexperienced, who kind of look up to you to give them the guidance, I would imagine. And there's some careers that you were there to see start.
Absolutely. You know, and I did a lot of that reflection leading up to my party last week. It's, you know, trying to work out even just who to invite. It's like there's been tens of thousands of people that I've interacted with over 25 years. And that's always been for me as the passion and the driving force, is that I am involved with shaping careers or putting on quality productions and that kind of thing. And that's what's important to me, you know, that I am imparting knowledge and experience to others.
Do you ever look back and go, I wish I'd done this, you know, with regrets? Like, I'd either wish I'd not done this, or I wish I'd helped that person out more. Or, because, I mean, there are little things that you could have done to have advanced careers very quickly, because it is a small... It's a small crowd of people who control the entertainment business.
It's actually quite incestuous if you think about it. Yeah. It's such a small industry.
Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you get the right people on your side, if you do stage shows and stuff, you can have a career. If you don't, you're out of business.
Absolutely. When I do speak to performers, I always say that, you know, the art of relationship building is so vital in our industry. And a lot of artists don't get that right, you know, especially if they rise to fame really quickly. And I'll say, you need relationships around you, because to have a career that's, you know, to ensure longevity, it's very, very hard. I mean, there's a lot of fly-by-nights, you're in and you're out, your flavor of the month. And I've seen a lot of artists come and go because of that. And then you look at the artists that are still working 20, 30 years later, and why. It's not just down to talents in this industry. It's really about nurturing the relationships and also being polite, being professional, being on time, being rehearsed, being ready. All those kinds of things all come into play as well. I mean, I have sat in auditions, which is quite scary, and I always say this to artists, is where producers cannot make the difference, like the choice between two. They are good looking, they are hugely talented, they can sing, they can dance, they can act, and then often it's down to, are they reliable?
Don't they eventually make the decision based on who will have sex with them?
No.
I thought that was how the theatre world
worked. No, that's a myth.
I was going to go into the theatre world now, and I'm not so interested.
But it's often down to, if there's a choice between two artists, it's who's reliable, who's going to be professional, that kind of thing. It plays a huge role.
Who do you reckon has been, or you don't have to name just one person, but who do you think the people are who've really been on top of this game, who've done better than anyone else? Because it is tough as hell, and you are only as good as your last performance. And you've said people have come and gone, but who's had the longevity? Who do you rate? And who do you love working with?
I mean, it's obviously difficult to equate, but
allowed to be partisan. Like, just for this morning, you're allowed to say who your
favorites
are. But
for me, we actually had a conversation recently. There was a golden era of artists back when we're in those days who are still around. It's your Samantha Pio, it's Juanita Kruger, Kate Normington. You've got Amra Faye, who's now on Broadway. You've got Edward Baker Julie, who's on Broadway. Robert Finlayson, who's in London.
Lana Green. I didn't realize some of these people were already doing the West End and Broadway.
Absolutely. Ah. Femme Belle is in Australia. Craig Aboni is still busy, you know, and he was back early days in Buddy Holly. And I think for me, those are still my golden era artists, you know, and I still love working with them, and they're still as professional as ever and as phenomenal as ever on stage. Obviously, there's been a lot of youngsters that have come in since, but for me, I suppose maybe also, I mean, I'm not very objective, but those were the artists that I started with, and they're still in the industry, and that says a lot.
Wardrobe malfunctions.
All the time.
Anybody let a dress fall down and expose themselves completely to the crowd? Mums, don't pull that face. You know it happens.
I'm not pulling a face.
The beauty of live theatre is actually just fixing those problems when a lot of the time the public don't even get to see it. It's the pants being split and the artists having to turn their back to the stage and things like that. And I think that's the beauty of live theatre is you don't know what's going to happen.
So
you can hide a lot of it.
So tell me about some of these quick fixes that you've had to pull off.
Thankfully, that has never been my role, because I don't know if I would be able to fix wardrobe changes. But there's always been, especially with Lycra coming apart at opportune moments. And I mean, there certainly were a few times in the shows at the soundstage where the girls in the Girl Powers bras slipped and untangled and untied. And the other. Wow. But the artists were always, I mean, and that's the beauty of it, is the artists are always prepared for things like that. And their fellow cast members will step in front of them while they fix their costume. And as I said, 99% of the time, the public don't even get to see those little hiccups.
I had a very, very amateur stint with theatre in high school.
Yes.
And I was cast in this one play. And that happened to me once as well, where I was walking back to the backstage and the skirt that I was wearing just fell off completely.
And you know what?
That happens, but nobody saw anything.
Mabali's only telling you half the story. Do you want to hear what song she was singing? Here she is performing the song. Listen. This is Mabali Moloi, unheard before, in her role where her whole outfit slipped off.
Tomorrow, bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow.
Listen to that voice, Mabs. Of course, you're playing a young orphan. It was most unfortunate that you had titties slip out.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't my titties. It was the skirt.
Okay. All right. Well, even worse. Pull the Sharon Stone on the audience when they were there to watch Annie.
No, but nobody saw anything. You're right, though. Most of the time, they don't even realize it.
If the audience knew half the time, you know.
You know, if you catch me on a good day, I could really enjoy some of the stuff just from the point of view of entertainment. But I do find, like, I in some way have outgrown the need to see musicals. And for some people, it's their favorite thing to do. South African audiences love musicals, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Musicals are definitely the most popular theatre art form here.
What are the most popular musicals, though? I mean, what are people just, they can't get enough of?
That also changes, you know.
Some of them have been going on for years.
Absolutely. You know, the big classics are often popular because of the nostalgia. So, you know, we've recently, if you think about it, we've got West Side Story on stage at the moment, which is definitely one of the best productions ever produced in South Africa. The Singing in the Rains, the Annies, people love that nostalgia, you know, Sound of Music, et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got your new ones, the We Will Rock Yous, the Wickeds, all that kind of thing, that are getting a whole new audience into the theatre, which is exactly, obviously, what we always strive for.
Do you ever have input into, because of your experience alone, into how the show gets put together in terms of maybe changing some stuff? How much are you allowed to change in shows like that are very well known?
It all depends, you know, on the producer and on the show. Sometimes there's the hard and fast rules, like the Phantoms of the Opera, where they have to literally stick word for word and stand on this spot and they can't change anything.
Really?
Absolutely, where they cannot do anything separate to the script. But then you also, more recently, you're now getting non-replica rights, which means that you have the right to change and adapt, which is the way that things are going now.
Because then you could take out all the boring parts and keep all the sexy bits in, and people will be thrilled.
Well, close enough, yeah. and obviously, especially for the older productions, is to make it obviously more relevant to the time and things like that.
What's the most stressful thing in a production?
I think the rehearsal period, you know, especially a big production, you've got especially big cast, you've got 36 people on stage, all having to learn to sing, dance, act,
all of them, all that kind of thing. Big egos.
All of that, juggling all of that in the creative team. And obviously, from my role, certainly more recently as publicist, you have a bit of a love-hate relationship with the creative team because they need to get the show on stage and I need to get coverage on the show. So I've got to bring in the film crews that are going to take a whole day of rehearsal and things like that. So it's juggling all those kinds of things. And always the production week is the most stressful. It's when the show has to get on stage and the band has to come in and all that kind of thing. It's 14, 15 hour days for the cast and the crew sometimes.
All right, level with me. Are the most difficult people in your experience A, the actors, B, the singers, C, the dancers? Who are the most difficult of those three?
Oh, no, you can't put me on the spot.
Yes, come on. This is the time for truth.
Oh, it seriously varies depending
Nonsense.
On the artist.
You know the answer.
It's often, well, often now, I mean, certainly now, the artists have to be triple threat, so they have to do it all. They have to sing, dance, and act, so you don't actually specialize anymore. But often, I mean, it's the older actors sometimes.
The ones who've really expect to be treated a certain way.
It's not even just an expectation. It's just sometimes it's a bit of a defense mechanism. You know, it's harder to learn lines, et cetera, et cetera. All these youngsters come in with entitlement issues. So you're
Who's the oldest person you've put on stage?
Probably Toby Cronier, who's been absolutely phenomenal every time I've worked with him.
Basically, I mean, he came in for an interview a while ago. He was like, he was made of dust. If I'd blown hard, he would have actually, you know, disappeared in the air.
Possibly, but he's such an inspiration. And for me,
I'm being sarcastic. Of course, he is.
But also, why I love him so much as well is he's still. Gets the youngsters around them, and if they want to learn, he's always giving them his time at rehearsals. Wow. He'll stand and he'll talk to them and give them his experiences. And you don't get a lot of that happening backstage. So I have so much admiration for him for that.
And they often say in movies, and I'm sure it's true for the stage as well, that the two things you don't want to do is work with animals and children.
They're always the most difficult.
Is that true?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely changing now with children because we are focusing a lot more on developing the youth, and I'm quite actively involved in that as well. I mean, we've got to have the next generation. Absolutely. You know, to find a 12-year-old who can open his or her mouth and just perform, it's phenomenal. And I'm that's what I'm most passionate about, is developing the youth at the moment.
And discovering them, is that also part of what you like to do?
It's such an amazing feeling to see a young performer and say, that's potential. And then obviously to see them down the line 5-10 years later, actually owning it on stage. You know, it's a great feeling.
With all your experience, you know, I did Idols for a couple of years and I was never really able to define what it is that makes some people unmissable and spectacular in every way, whether they're on stage or, you know, singing in a bar or a pub or just sitting around the fire with their guitar. There's some people who just can command
a stage.
Immediate attention and respect. And then there are others who don't. Do you know what that thing is? Have you been able to define it?
You can't give it a clear definition, but you can certainly notice it when it's there. And I've been blessed with that skill. Somewhere along the line, I developed it. It's not something I learned. It was just something in me. Where you can watch a stage of 20 artists and you say, that one and that one is going to go places. And a lot of it is just, as you say, it's that commanding that presence. Yeah. You know, they might all be talented. They might all be able to sing, dance, or do whatever. But your attention keeps going back to that same person. And that's what I love about my job, is like literally taking that moment and saying, okay, let's do something together.
It sounds to me like you've also spent a lot of time thinking about and worrying about and helping out other people. And that means like less time for you.
Absolutely.
And you're okay with that?
It was literally a clear decision I had to make probably about 10, 15 years ago. And certainly when I went into publicity and then more recently into producing, it was something that I made that conscious decision of. I found my passion. I found like my calling. I mean, I know that's cliche.
So it doesn't feel like sacrifice.
You know, I miss things. Specifically, I'm very close with my family, and obviously my family don't get to see a lot of me. And it's missing the birthdays and the anniversaries and the funerals and that kind of thing, which is very hard for me. But it's making that clear decision of, I can't work and do what I do, but also have my own family. So I had to make that clear decision not to get married, not to have children, which obviously some people have criticized me for as well. I couldn't do both. I couldn't work the way I do and then still have to consider a family.
in the entertainment business, there must have been moments where you thought, where you met somebody, for example, and, you know, these productions are a bit of a euphoria. So there's always excitement in the air, I suppose. And it's like a movie set. You kind of fall in love and then you fall out of love very quickly.
Absolutely.
Have there been moments where you thought, nah, screw this, I'd rather just marry that guy there and go off into the sunset?
To be honest, no.
Really?
Absolutely. And I honestly can say that it's never been a case of, oh my word, I want to throw it away for this person or for that reason.
Really? That's crazy.
I know it's crazy.
Well, to some people it's crazy to want to settle down with somebody. But for you, obviously, this was just the route to happiness.
Absolutely. It is every day when I get up and I do what I do, it's fulfillment in itself. I mean, there are stresses and challenges and there've been fabulous highs and devastating lows, obviously. I mean,
sure.
You know, it hasn't all been plain sailing. But for me, it's certainly been, you know, every experience is a learning curve, good or bad. And I've always believed that, you know, especially with the way that I came into the industry, it's almost like the universe had a plan without being too, you know, getting into too much spirituality or anything. It's like the universe had a plan for me. I mean, it's like if I hadn't have gone into hotels, if I hadn't have traveled to London, if I hadn't have been an au pair of all things, you know, or offered my time, you know, where would I have been, you know?
Do you sometimes think that in some way, all these performers and all these artists and all these people that you represent now, they kind of are your children?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, that's always the joke is I've had probably over 10,000 children, you know, and I do. And I still, you know, I was teasing the international artist that was out here last week. It was like, I'm a mother hen, and I am like that with every single cast that I have. It's like I love nurturing, and I just love making sure that they're happy and comfortable as well. And I think that also translates into whatever production or event I'm working on, is that there is time and care and energy put in.
Who've been your biggest supporters?
Well, obviously my family. And I, as I said in my speech last week, it's like I never really thought about what my parents went through. I mean, for me to come back at 23, I'd been away, and then they were thinking, okay, she's going to go back into hotels and at least it's a real job.
And then you quit.
And then I'm like, I'm going to go into the entertainment world. And then, okay, and then I found, you know, obviously you worked with Richard and then that was okay. It was a steady job. And then it's like, I'm going freelance, you know. So they've been incredible supporters. And my longest supporters has definitely been Richard and Jeanette Loring and Debbie Batsoff and From the Soundstage. I mean, they're still friends and colleagues to this day. And then, you know, it's always been important for me, the relationships that I've built. So, I mean, I have relationships with people who have literally followed my career, like, you know, Carolyn Stain from those days, 23, 25 years, you know.
And when you think back now, it was quite a brave move to kind of go on your own and decide to be a freelance publicist and agent.
It was very scary, actually. But again,
because you'd always worked under someone's wing.
Well, that was it, you know. And obviously that was the concern, is Richard Loring was such a brand, you know. And so it was always me phoning somebody saying, it's Colette from Richard Loring. Mm. And when I spoke to him, and he was incredible when I wanted to make the decision, and he'd certainly gave me a lot of guidance and support. And
isn't it interesting that sorry to interrupt you, but those people who do that, who are prepared to let you
go,
fly,
basically. Yeah.
Because he could easily, you were doing great work for him. He could have easily said, you're going to make a mistake, giving you advice that served him.
Absolutely.
Rather than advice that served you.
And that's why, I mean, the respect and the love is always there, you know, and I will always be grateful for that. But one of the pieces of advice that he gave me in that conversation was, work as hard as you can until you get to the point where when you phone somebody, you don't have to explain where you're from. All you need to do is give your name. And it was something that stayed with me, because I was always Colette Dawson from Richard Loring Enterprises.
Yeah.
And he said, when you get to that stage where you just say, it's Colette Dawson, and people know who you are, that's where you know you're on the right track.
And I think that's probably happening.
I'd like to believe that I'm
been happening
mostly
for a
there.
While. Is there money in entertainment in South Africa?
No.
Like, just a straightforward no.
You know, I mean, there is, and a lot of us are working hard and earning, but, I mean, and that's my family. You know, as I say, my siblings still look at me and say, why do you do what you do? You know, the hours that you put in doesn't equate into what you earn. You know, my brother is down the line, it's if you've put in 10 hours, you must charge for 10 hours. It's like, it doesn't work like that in the entertainment industry.
And for publicity purposes, you have to hang around until the very end.
And it's not a tangible service. That's the problem, is you can't say, you know, those 10 seats are sold because of that one article. You know, it's not a tangible service that you provide. Mm. It's all in the air kind of vibe. So a lot of the time you're having to justify fees, which is also very frustrating. Is, you know, that one interview, I mean, you know, just the organizing of one interview, the amount of time and effort that goes into it.
Well, it took us 5.5 years just to get you in here. That's how difficult these interviews are.
But, you know, people don't equate that. Just like they see one interview. Okay, cool. Yeah. You know, no thinking of the time and the planning and the getting and all that kind of thing, you know. So it's very hard to justify fees, and it's still frustrating 20 years later. It's like, justify your fee to somebody. Or your value to the production. Because often the first thing that gets cut is the marketing and publicity budget, which is so frustrating. I mean, that's where the money should be going.
Who are the people who sell out crowds, who will make a production successful? Do we have artists like that? You know, like in Hollywood, if you have an A-list actor who you just know is going to be a box office success, yeah, because you can bank on them. That's the reason you cast them in a movie. Do we have that here?
Not nearly at that level. You know, I mean, the whole celebrity culture and the pulling power of artists is still minimal. But having said that, there are the Jonathan Rocksmiths, or if somebody puts Bobby van Jaarsveld into something, people are going to come. So, but it's minimal to the extreme. A lot of the time, it's all about the ensemble. It's the cast. It's the product.
And the music itself, I mean, do we have enough talented musicians
Absolutely.
To pull that stuff off?
Absolutely. We have such a wealth of talent here, from singers to musicians. I mean, I sit in these rehearsals and you just hear, and they're passionate, and there's a lot of passion put into it as well. You know, there's definitely room for so much for our artists.
I always imagine that these people on these productions, because it's sometimes 6, 9 months, a year even, on a production.
Yeah.
You know, if it goes well.
Yes. And they tour and...
These people are around each other. It's almost like Survivor.
Absolutely.
They're on an island together because they eat, sleep, breathe. They live in each other's space. They're very close to each other the whole time. There's a lot of relationships that develop there. Do you have to advise them sometimes not to get too close, because when the production's over, everything changes?
And it is quite surreal to watch. I mean, as you say, it becomes such a close-knit family so quickly.
Yeah.
And there
and
are
then suddenly
some,
it breaks up and people can't handle that.
Exactly. And often you have to manage that, you know, and then there's, as you say, the relationships and dramas and all that kind of thing. And a lot of the time, sometimes
and the
it's
dancers,
just...
the dancers just have non-stop sex with each other. Isn't
well,
that
you
true?
Really like listening to all these myths.
Isn't it true? Come on, Mabali, you know these very hot dancers on these shows. You just imagine, like I do. I'm sure you do this. Don't pretend that when the curtain closes, they just go backstage and just have huge, tremendous amounts of sex with each other.
Oh, Gareth, I think you're performing different kinds of productions than me working.
You don't think so?
I don't.
Oh, come on. What do you think they do? Sit and have tea?
I mean, they
put their feet in ice, actually, and then just save their feet for the next day.
That's not sexy.
That's not sexy at all. But I mean,
how depressing.
Yeah.
I really thought they were having those dancers, because those, especially those girls with those bodies. I mean, they must.
Listen, a lot of the guys have a lot of problem averting their eyes backstage, because certainly anything.
Averting their eyes, trying not to fall over themselves when they walk onto the stage.
No, absolutely. Listen, something the dancers else. Are the most disciplined, because they have to they have to work hard to keep themselves in that.
But they
show.
Do all fall in love.
Oh, I mean, absolutely, in and out of love, and I mean, there's been lots of relationships, lots of marriages, even. You know.
Mm. Do they last?
I mean, a lot of them do. You know, I mean, some don't. You know, but I think it's in any kind of walk of life, you know. And the ones that don't, often it's just about schedules, you know. I mean, one partner is traveling to one side of the world and the other one to the other. You know, how do you sustain that?
Have you ever made enemies in this entertainment industry? You don't have to name names.
I'm sure.
Wink twice if you have.
I'm sure there are a few, but I'd like to believe that I don't have too many, if any. As I say, relationships are important to me, you know, so hopefully not too many.
And are the media supportive of the performing arts?
They're as supportive as they can be. It is changing
at
the moment.
Come on, if you want to say they're
not, go ahead. No, listen, I am blessed for the support that I get and the coverage that I get for what I do. The challenge is the lack of space for publicity in the various different media forms.
What's the best way to get through to people and to grow that theatre audience?
It's changing completely at the moment, obviously with everything moving online and social media and things like that. But it's still juggling both forms, you know. It's still,
'cause it used to be that you had to get good reviews, yeah, and that's it. And no one reads reviews.
At the moment, I mean, obviously you still need them, but at the moment it's all about word of mouth.
Aren't all the reviewers dead? And aren't you glad?
There are still a few. There are still a few around, but the challenge is
the
now
critics.
There are a lot of new reviewers who aren't experienced reviewers, which is the challenge often for a production. So people are giving opinions that aren't knowledgeable opinions about a production. But for me, it's yes, you do need the reviews because obviously the producer wants a document of what they're doing. But for me, it's word of mouth. It's getting those people in from opening night onwards. It's Joe Bloggs who buys tickets. You know, I mean, look at all the major productions, Cats, and We Will Rock You had the worst reviews ever.
Did it?
Absolutely. I mean, the storyline is crazy, you know, but it's Queen's music and it ran forever. So it's all about impressing and pleasing the public. And then that word of mouth kicks in, you know, the reviewers actually either support it or actually just fall by the wayside.
After 25 years of being in this industry, are there shows that you still want to do that you haven't done yet?
There's some new shows I'd love to do.
Tell me.
I was blown away when I was in New York in October with School of Rock, Andrew Lloyd Webber's new production. Phenomenal, phenomenal version of the movie. And young kids again performing in the show. That's a new bucket list on my list.
Are you going to try and put that on at some point?
I'd love to. But royalty rights with the really useful company is not so easy for a fledgling producer of 4 years. So
and tell us about this show, Gone Too Soon.
Yes. The concept came about last year, and it's to pay tribute, obviously, to all our music legends that have died before their time. The concept came to me actually while I was in rehearsal of a tribute show, Supreme Divas at Joburg Theatre, and we had just lost Gugu Zulu, who obviously was a very close friend of mine, and we were all reeling at the shock. It was literally 10 days after his death, and I was watching the show, and they were singing an Amy Winehouse number, obviously one of the legends who had died before her time, and I was just like, we have lost so many legends, close and far. Is this a possibility? And I started thinking, and the seed planted itself in me, and I was like, and I didn't let go. Then I knew I was onto something, and just developed it with my creative team. And we realized there are so many artists.
Who are these people who were gone too soon?
So it's, I mean, just look at last year, for example. I mean, it's Freddie Mercury, it's George Michael, Michael Jackson, David Bowie, Prince. You know, we're starting with the men. Marvin Gaye, Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, you know, there's just so, and often in such bizarre circumstances.
Yeah.
So when the.
John Denver, he in there? No. Okay. I'm the only one who cares about John Denver. I take it back.
So we sat with my creative team and we started looking and realized there are so many artists we'd have to do a series. So we're starting off with the men. And then we carried on looking at it. And then actually when I made the decision was in October when I was in New York and I met with Meg Ayessa, who's our international headliner. And I said, there was only one person who could do Freddie for me. I mean, we have so many people who do it, but he is so close to the real thing. It's actually quite scary. And he committed to it, to the show on the spot. And the idea germinated.
That's your power, you see. Like, you've developed this reputation after 25 years, and look what it gets you. It gets you the person you want.
Well, I'm very blessed because actually all four of them were handpicked by me and they all jumped on board straight away.
You mentioned Freddie Mercury. I mean, he had a very, very peculiar voice.
Yeah.
He had an incredible range. There are not a lot of people who can sing like Freddie Mercury. And this guy can, you say?
Absolutely. I mean, we met on We Will Rock You. He was flown in 9 years ago when the South African cast were touring Asia. And I went to go visit them in Hong Kong. And they'd flown Meg in to be Galileo. And I mean, we joke about it today. Is I went in with resistance thinking, why a foreigner? You know, why isn't a local playing the lead? And he just blew me away. I mean, there's no one I've heard that is close to us. And again, just going back to that stage presence, you know, that you were talking about earlier. And obviously we picked up, we stayed in touch, always wanted to work together. And then who would have thought when I pitched the idea and I told him it was my 25th anniversary, it is a show close to my heart. And he jumped on board. Connell Cruz jumped on board as well. I convinced Kurt Herman to come from behind the scenes of the music producer now and to come back on stage.
Kurt used to do backing vocals and, well, he still does on Idols.
Idols and The Voice.
What a talented guy.
Phenomenal. And now a music producer and engineer of note. He's just done Mango Groove's album.
But I just love people like that who are behind the scenes. And you are like one of these people who have these unique and sometimes very particular talents. And you don't, you know, a lot of people don't see them as talents, but that's all they are. Because what you are, you're almost like a juggler when you've been in all these roles that you've had.
Absolutely.
And you're juggling this ball and you're throwing that up in the air and you're catching this one and it's all happening at once. And only with your level of talent and experience can you pull that off.
Multitask.
Well done to you. I mean, congratulations on 25 years. I'm really happy we got to catch up and find out a little bit more about you.
Thank you, Gareth. And thank you for your support. You know, I can't do what I do without people.
Well,
like
you can never get me to a show.
Well, one day, and I'm still going to get you into a show as I've made you commit to when you had your carols.
I lied. I will never.
One day.
Colette Dawson, it's a pleasure to sit down and talk to you for a while. And long may your story continue and many successes along the future route, as many as there have been so far already.
Stunning. And thank you, Gareth.
Thank you. All right, we're pretty much out of here. We're going to leave you with the Gas Comedy Podcast for this morning. And that's featuring Eric Janssen and not Dave Levinson. Because poor Eric never gets the attention. It's always about Dave. Right, Ben? Last week Eric was wearing a
Levinson and Levinson shirt.
Unbelievable.
He's got like a spell over him or something.
What is going on there? We've got to figure that out. It's sounds terribly unhealthy. Okay, so thank you for joining us this morning and have a good weekend. We will see you on Monday. Blah, 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 blah. Cheers. Here's the unnews. This week it was revealed how much Queen Elizabeth drinks on a daily basis. Many are horrified that the 42 units of alcohol she consumes on average in a week classify her as a binge drinker. Can you believe that? Prince Harry had a different take on this, though. He told the press that at least they all know where he gets his behavior cues from. In other news, an elderly woman in Jeffreys Bay has driven her car through the entrance of a local Spur restaurant. Yep. Claiming to have confused the accelerator for the brake, it was later revealed that she just doesn't like Native American Indians. The ANC Youth League are considering making her the next Penny Sparrow, but Oros Maine heard the word spur and got distracted with hunger. He's currently at the buffet. Finally, it's the Soweto Derby this weekend between Chiefs and Pirates. In an attempt to get people to go and watch this overhyped draw, Pirates are allegedly considering playing Mini Dlamini as their goalkeeper. Can you believe that? Having not won a league game in over 100 days, the selection of Minenhle Dlamini isn't exactly going to make the team any weaker, but it will at least fill up the area behind the goals for 90 minutes. Isn't that good news? Have a good weekend. We will see you on Monday. Thank you, everybody. CliffCentral.com.